Okay, so last time we started the topic of bitul chametz, and we brought up some basic things that we need to figure out, we need to know, and we got a little bit of a taste of what's out there. And we know from the Gemara, what we start off knowing is that there's such a thing as bitul chametz that we know from our youth, that's what we've always done, that we do bitul chametz twice, actually. At the end of the Bedika Chametz search, and the next morning at the time of the Bir Chametz. So we know that's part of our practice. It's in our Sidurim. And our Gemara makes a few references to it later on the Avav, telling us that there is this obligation to do Bittul even with Bedika. And what really prompted our discussion about is where we're at on Dalet Amud Beis, where the Gemara says, in reference to a specific question about Bedikas Chametz, that we can treat Bedikas Chametz as a Drabanan because of the role of Bittul Chametz. Because the Bittul Ba'al Masagi, so therefore Bedika is Midrabanan. And that one sentence contains multitudes, teaching us that Bedikas Chametz could have been an obligation in HaTorah, but it's kept from that, or it's not practically the case, because Bittul carries some of the load. Bittul does something to neutralize that. So we know that Bittul affects some concern min HaTorah. We're not clear whether it is accomplishing a mitzvah min HaTorah, like a tashbisu perhaps, or is it addressing a iser zaraisa, like the eating of chametz, or bayra bayimatze. We're not sure exactly, but what the Gemara makes it clear is that it's there to address some concern min HaTorah, and in partnership with Bedikas Chametz. That much we know from the Gemara. So we tried to figure out a number of questions, and just for today's purposes, let's start with two questions to recap and to try to summarize. So one, let's make this the first question. Before we really can figure out anything, we need to know where Bedika fits in. So, is Bedika there as an Eitzah for all Chametz? Or as a Chiyuv for all Chametz? Or is it limited to certain circumstances? So, the question of whether Bedika applies to Chametz Yadua is going to be a big one, because it's going to be hard to really come with any cohesive approach to it without knowing when it makes sense and when it doesn't make sense. So does Bittul Chametz work if you know about the Chametz? Or is it just something that is utilized for the Chametz that we don't know about and can't address through the other methods of Bir, and Bir and Bedika are of course linked, because you first search out the Chametz and then destroy it, so Bedika is a tool towards Bir, so that you could do with the Chametz that you find, but the Chametz that you didn't find, you don't know about, so we know that Bittul works for that. Does it only work for that, or could it work even for Chametz that is known? So this is a machlokas Rishonim, it seems, and just to focus on two of the major sources that discuss it, is the Ramban that you saw, right? The Ramban who starts off right away, and he says, it works for all Chametz. And he says, you got to say like that because of a few Gemaras. So among them, there are Gemaras that say things like, let's say somebody is sitting in shir. And, of course, no one misses shir for anything. And he realizes that he's got a loaf of bread in his pantry. So what should he do? Can't leave shir. So he should be mevatel. So it sounds like here he's aware of specific chametz, and yet this will work. Or if he's on the way to go shecht his carbon pesach, and he realizes this, again, Bittul works. So Ramban says, there you have it, black on white, that Bittul Chametz works even for Chametz that you know about, Chametz that you remember at an inconvenient time. So Bittul Chametz is effective. In contrast to that seems to be the Rambam. That the position associated with the Rambam is that bitul chametz only works for chametz she'eino yadua. Now, why am I using so many vague words, like politician words, for saying that seems to be a position associated with him? Because there is some room to wonder. Because there is some girsa question. So, here, I don't know what Rambam views when you are looking at Makaros. I have in front of me the Shapsi Frankel Rambam, so here you can consider different texts. You may have a different text, but there is an issue that the Kesef Mishner calls attention to and gets involved in, that there seems to be different nishchos. So what we have, or what I have, let's say, in front of me in the Shapsi Frankel, is Parak Beis, Halacha Beis, and the Rambam. Umahi hashpasa. What is in the Torah says hashpisu? What does that mean? Mahi hashpasa zu hamura b'Torah. He shivatel hachamit b'libo. The achshov also ka'afar. The asim b'libo she'ein b'rishusel chamit kwa. So he should decide in his heart that the chamit is not in his rishus, that he doesn't have any chamit in his rishus. V'shekol chamit rishusel way ka'afar k'davar she'ein bo tzarech kwa. So does he say anything there about Yadua or Eino Yadua? Not in that text. Just that's what you do to the Chametz. However, the Kesef Mishnah in his Dibur HaMaschil here has different words. And so the Dibur HaMaschil, the Kesef Mishnah here, is Umahi Hashpasa Zu Hamur B'Torah. He Sheyasir HaChametz HaYadua Lo Mirshuso. So the text that the Kesef Mishnah has is different, and it draws a distinction that the Chametz Yadua you have to destroy, and Bitul is there specifically for Chametz She'eino Yadua. So working off of that text, and the Kesef Mishnah after that, Dibur Maschil has language here, Zu hanufcha shevesifrei rabbeinu shebiyadeinu. That's the nufach that he has in his hands, that text of the Rambam. So working off that text first, to assume that there is this distinction. So the cast of Mishnah says, how would I explain that? So the way I'd explain it is that there is a instance here of what we spoke about in Chol HaMoed, for those who are with us, the interesting halachic category of Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim, which seems to refer to a din min haTorah, which has a goal, but the parameters of how to get to that goal were given to the rabbis to define. The most prominent example of that is the Malacha prohibition on Chol HaMoed, and we spoke about that on actual Chol HaMoed. So the usage here, says the Kesef Mishnah, if this is the proper text in the Rambam, what we would say is that the Torah just tells us Tashbisu, get rid of the Chametz. And Rashi understands, we haven't chazed him yet, but Rashi understands that Tashbisu doesn't have to mean Havar, it doesn't have to mean destroying. So Hashbasu Belev is enough. But in the Rambam, he's assuming a more complicated formulation. And that it depends. That really it should mean destroy. So the chametz that you're aware of and that you can find should be destroyed. But the chametz that you can't find, that you're not aware of, she'eni yadua, so there the rabbis understood with the power vested in them that in the absence of being able to do beer, so bitul is sufficient. They understood bitul to be an adequate alternative for the hashpasa that we would really want if we actually know about the chametz. So what about the kashas the Ramban brings up about the situations where there is chametz yadua and still bitul works? You're sitting in shir, you're on the way to shecht your korban Pesach. There you know about it. So the Kesef Mishnah says, well, that's because this is the structure, that essentially it's a Torah concept that the rabbis were given the role of defining. So they said, okay, most of the time it should really be beer, but there are scenarios where that's difficult, so we'll be satisfied with bittel. So if you don't know about the chametz for sure, that's in such a category. And once we're saying that, we can also say where it's simply not shy for you to do it right now because you're in the middle of shir and you're on your way to assess the carbon Pesach. Those are situations where, yeah, you know about the chametz, but it's still not accessible to you because of your personal involvement in other things. And therefore, that's going to be comparable. Chazal were able to assess that that's the same kind of thing as it not being known to you. So far, so good? So that's all what he would say within the text that he has. That position of the Rambam is Chamesh Einu Yedu'alo with no bittul. Chamesh Sheyedu'alo with no bittul. So that's the first part. But then he goes on to say that I don't think Lamaisa this is the right text. Because even if those questions can be answered, it says one question, which the Ramban has mentioned also, that we can't answer. And that is that when the Gemara talks about the concern of finding chametz on Pesach that's going to be appealing, so the Gemara says, why don't you be mevatel it then? And addresses the consideration that you may decide to be so interested in it that that's going to cause you problems. So it sounds like that there you have this chametz in front of you, and that theoretically, bittul could have worked. So how do you get around that? There you have chametz and tiyadua, and bittul is a theoretical possibility. So for that reason, he essentially says, he assumes that that's not the correct nusach, and that the nusach must be what Shapsi Frankel will someday put in his Rambam. That doesn't draw any distinction. So the actual position of the Rambam is in dispute, but nonetheless, many do work off the initial nusach that the Kesef Mishnah quoted, and assume that the Rambam maintains that bittul only works for chametz she'ein yedu'alo and won't work for chametz that you know about. In contrast to the Ramban and others, that it works for all chametz. Okay, so far so good. That's one thing to keep in mind, that in order to try to understand what bittul chametz is, we need to know when it works and when it doesn't work, because that probably will affect what its concept is. So then we started to consider the question of what is bittul? What do the words mean? So we saw that there are a number of shitas, at least two, probably more than two, but at least two broad themes which the later other shitas might connect to depending on how you understand them. But we start off with at least two. So one is that a bittul is a hashbasa b'leiv, is a mental disassociation from the chametz. And that view is shared by Rashi and the Rambam. They both formulate it the same way, a few others as well, that a bittul is hashbasa b'leiv. And then we saw Tosfos. Tosfos didn't like that position. And Tosfos's view was that it is hefker. You are being mafkir, the chametz. That view is associated both with Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, the Baal Yad Tosfos. Our daf with Rabbeinu Tam, other Rishonim quoted from the Ri. We offered the possible suggestion that there's some space in the Tosfos and our daf to say it's not actually hefker. Maybe it just brings about the same result as hefker, because the language of Tosfos is that after bittul, the chametz is hefker. Maybe it just means that it's something else that brings about the same result. But that's the overall idea, that you are declaring the chametz ownerless through this process of hefker. Now, wait a minute, the Rishonim who advocates this position discuss, what about the fact that hefker requires three, and no one says that bittul chametz requires three? So how do you have hefker here? So the Rishonim say the Ritzvah at greater length than Tosfos, but the Rishonim say that really Hefker min HaTorah doesn't require three. And for these purposes, we can rely on Hefker min HaTorah. We don't have to do the full Hefker that Chazal expanded upon. So those are, to begin with, the two major views, and many other comments that may or may not fit into those categories. But we start off with either Hashpasa Belez or Hefker. And then we mentioned two other views that, how they line up, we have to figure out, but they both draw upon a crucial added source, and that's the Gemara and Avav. They both assume that that Gemara is a vital part of what makes Bittul make sense. And it's the idea that Chametz is in a special category. Chametz is not your typical item. That the Gemara says that it's like a bor b'rishus harabim. In that, these two things, Chametz and a bor that you would dig in a public place, eino b'rishus harabim. They are not actually in your possession. But asal akasiv ke'ilu heim b'rishus harabim. That the Torah makes it as if it's like in your possession in order to get you in trouble. So the comparison in the Gemara is that you have a bor b'rishus harabim, that most of the time when you have a chi of nezikin, if you're liable for some damaging force, it's because you own the item that did the damage. But if you dig a hole in the middle of a public street, so it's not your street, it's not your hole, but you're liable anyway. So that's a chiddush haTorah, that you're liable for something that's causing harm to others, even though it's not yours. The fact that you put it there makes it like it's yours. So chametz is different, but comparable. That chametz is not actually halachically yours. But the Torah makes it yours for Isser purposes. Now, why isn't it yours? So that we saw is a little bit of a machlokas. Some say because it's Usser Bahana, and anything that is prohibited Bahana is not subject to ownership. The topic of a big discussion of itself. Discussion that the Rishonim and the Achronim get involved in, the Rishonim give hints to, the Achronim have long essays about. If you ever have the source of learning the Sefer Marcheshes of Repenet Egesh, who was the Rav of Vilna, in the first simon, that's what he takes up, the question of whether something that is prohibited Bahana, is that subject to ownership? And it revolves around questions such as something that is prohibited Bahana, does it have any value? Is there any price you can put on something that cannot be used for anything? And if not, then is it possible to own something, which is a monetary term, is it possible to own something that doesn't have any value? Maybe if it doesn't have any value, it can't be owned. So that's a whole discussion Achronim have. There's some who draw lines that maybe you can own it, but you can't transfer it. Maybe you can't make a kinyan on something that doesn't have any value. A kinyan needs to attach to something that has monetary value. So maybe it could be one without the other. It could be ownership, but it can't be transferred. So there's a whole discussion about this. So one could say that chametz, the concept of ownership, doesn't make sense. Others say it's not necessarily because of the Isser Hana by itself, but it's the fact that it's on death row. The fact that it is waiting to be destroyed, and anything that is waiting to be destroyed, we find that differently in halacha, is as if it's already done. Sometimes certain things like this in halacha, we fast forward, and if it's on death row, we consider it dead already. So it's kilo, it doesn't exist. So you can't own something that doesn't exist. But nonetheless, the Torah made it yours to get you in trouble, which you could say a few ways also. You could say that the whole nature of the Isser is not really halachic ownership of Bayura Bayimatze. It's not really halachic ownership. It is to act with ownership towards something. And it's not relevant whether the halach actually recognizes that ownership. And that makes sense, especially as far as we've been seeing about what Bayura Baimatzeh is about. It's really more about access and ownership. So we don't really care whether you have the title to it. We care whether it's in your Rishus and Matzah B'Yado, and that's why we saw in the immediately previous sugya that if you're renting a house from somebody else and their chametz is there, and it's not yours, but we saw that at least from Rashi's position, it seems you might be in violation of Bayura Baimatzeh anyway. So it's not about legal ownership as much as it's about access, so fine. So we use terms like ownership, but really we don't mean halachic ownership. You could also draw a parallel. There's a well-known prohibition in Judaism against intermarriage. But you could say, well, how could there be a prohibition against intermarriage? Kiddushin is not chal. So shouldn't be anything wrong with marrying a non-Jew because it's not Kiddushin. So there's no reality to the Kiddushin, so therefore it's impossible to violate the Isser. So we understand there that the Isser is not about effecting the status of Kiddushin. The Isser is about acting as man and wife with somebody who's not Jewish. So too here, acting with ownership towards chametz is the iser, even though it's not really subject to ownership. So that diluted connection, like that idea that it's not actual bialus in the normal sense, is a part of the puzzle here, according to the Ramban and the Ran. So the Ramban invokes it to essentially say that it's not really chametz at that point. And for that reason, it's not really something subject to the Isser. And together with the fact that it's not really in your Rishos, so Bittul works. While the Ran also invokes this, it seems to focus more on the ownership impact. As we mentioned last time, it could say a little bit of a word game. So it's lechem and lachem, just a question with a chaf or a ches. So the Ramban is focusing on it not being lechem with a ches. And the Ramban and the Ran seems to be focusing more on it not being lechem and not being yours, that since Torah just threw it back at you, even though it's not really yours to begin with, but it's being placed into your rishus by this chiddush, if you want to stop that, it's easier than normal. You don't require actual processes of hefker. But to just declare, I'm not interested in, no backsies basically, I'm not interested in having it back, so that should be enough. So that Ran, very interesting. It's utilized in a lot of discussions. And one of the things we need to figure out is he saying, therefore, it is hefker, but hefker is easier because of this quasi-ownership, or is he saying it's something else other than hefker? That we'll see probably today a little bit. It's open for some discussion, but it's invoked in a lot of contexts. I'll tell you a secret rabbi concern. So we will talk later on in the year about Mechiras Chametz. I'm sure we will. It's fascinating. Another fascinating topic, but a couple of nightmares that the rabbi has when he gets involved in the Mechiras Chametz, especially if he has a large congregation with much expensive chametz on. So he's taking on the responsibility for keeping all those chametz mutter. And what happens if he messes up? Right? What happens if he loses the forms? That's one of the nightmares that rabbis have. So that discussion about, we could talk about later. What happens if there's some flaw in the sale? Right, what happens if you later run into the guy you sold the chametz at his son's bar mitzvah? And you realize, wait a minute, it's a problem. So let's say there's some kind of a flaw in the sale. So you thought you did the mechiras chametz, but you didn't actually. So is everybody in violation of Bayura Baimatzeh? Is all their chametz prohibited? So there are some who invoke the Ran here, and they say that the Ran isn't really focused on actual ownership technicalities. He's focused just on declaring Gilui Das that you don't want the chametz to be in your possession. So maybe one could argue that even a failed sale is a declaration. So if I thought I was selling my chametz and it happened not to work, maybe that's just as good as an act of bittul, essentially. And I thought I was throwing something out the window and I didn't realize the window was closed, so it flew back in. So if I thought I threw it out, maybe that throwing it out is an act of bittul, and the fact that it was actually back in my room the whole time isn't necessarily going to undo that, perhaps. So this round is an important round. It's invoked in a lot of contexts. Akiva.
Don't most people say, don't most people mevatel their chametz anyways after they do bedikah?
Yeah.
So even more so, no? Even if it's...
Okay, that gets to a question of, and we'll talk about this when we get into Mechira Sametz, about how those two play against each other, Mechira and Bittul. They have a complicated relationship. So we'll talk about that, God willing, in due time. Okay, so that we laid out basically four positions in the Rishonim, which some of them may fold into each other, they may not, but basically four positions that we've seen so far, and there's going to be more. But for now, let's focus on a certain kasha that was brought up, in this case, by the Chidushei HaRim, the Ger Rebbe, the Rim, has many, many Sfarim under that title. He was very prolific. So the Chidushei HaRim is to say for Al HaTorah, and his Sfarim on the Shulchan Aruch, and Sfarim on the Masechtas. So he also has Tshuvas. So in the Tshuvas, Chidushei HaRim, in Siman Zayin, Aruch Hayim Siman Zayin, he brings up a certain question on the view of Rashi and the Rambam. Right, what's their opinion that mentally you disconnect from the chametz and you decide that the chametz isn't important to you? So he has a kasha on this. And the kasha is prompted primarily by a contradictory text, the Gemara Maseches Sukkah, that I put on your list to look at. So having seen that Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, can anyone anticipate what his question is? Yeah, all right.
I mean, I think that Gemara Sukkah spoke about that if the item in the sukkah that is working out your flooring is significant to other people with some mechanism, mm-hmm. that it can't be effectuated at the form of bittul. So maybe say here too, that since these items that are chametz are viewed as significant in the eyes of others, maybe not Jews, but the Pesach, but they're viewed as significant in some regard, and they shouldn't be, bittul shouldn't be able to expect.
Okay, exactly. Very good. I'm just going to clarify a little bit what you said, but that's essentially exactly it. That the Gemara there in the Sechel Sukkah discusses that let's say you have a sukkah and it's too much of a gap between the floor and the sach. It's too high. So can you do anything? You can't bring the sach lower, let's assume, under these circumstances. So can you bring the floor higher? So how would you bring the floor higher? So you could call in a contractor and have him totally remake the floor, but that's not going to be so practical. So maybe you can put stuff on the floor that will become the new floor. So you will be on top of that, and it'll be less of a distance between the floor and the ceiling. So let's say you get some nice fancy pillows and cushions, and you decide, your wife doesn't know you're doing this, you put them all on the dirt on the bottom of the sukkah, and that's going to be the new floor. So the Gemara says, no, it doesn't work, because in order for it to count for the floor, so what you're basically saying is, these are no longer cushions and pillows, I am mevatel them, they are now dirt. They are now the floor of my sukkah. So for you to decide that they are dirt, that's very nice, but like we mentioned a minute ago, your wife's not going to feel the same way. She doesn't like that you're taking the fancy cushions from the couch inside and declaring them as dirt. She thinks they are quite beautiful and they were quite expensive. So therefore, says the Gemara, it doesn't matter what you declare them to be. But l'daitocha eiv soldas kol bnei adam. Any other person would see these as valuable and very functional couches, cushions, and pillows. And the fact that you're declared, no, it's not, it's actually dirt, it's not going to do anything for it. So if that's the case, so how does bitul chametz work? And in particular, you could ask the question in a basic way, but let's say especially, and some farm has the language, that especially if, let's say, it's expensive chametz. Right? If it was really manish, just nothing crumbs that nobody would notice, okay, I hear it. But since we don't find that to be the limitation, and you could have chametz that's expensive and it's still subject to bitul, so how does that work? Why don't we say, like we say in Sukkah, Batla Daitacha Eitzel Das Kol Bnei Adam? So this was the question the Rim brought up, and he worked to resolve it, and others worked to resolve it, and to challenge his approach to it, and it branches out into a number of fascinating points. But first, so let me ask you, so what would you say? Can you differentiate between those two ideas, between the cushions and the sukkah and your expensive chametz, kiva?
Well, it's derech bnei adam to be mevatel chametz on Pesach, but it's not derech bnei adam to put cushions on the floor of the sukkah.
So how are you defining derech bnei adam? Because we have a policy of bitul, so therefore everyone signs on to that?
Yeah, there's a societal norm that people are getting mevatel their chametz. So
that clearly is a distinction. So we have to figure out how meaningful it is and what creates that distinction. Is it just because, does that redefine how people view things? Because it's not even necessarily, I think what you're saying is important, it's probably related to the answer, but what the Gemara in Sukkah is saying is that because these are perceived as valuable items, your declaration that they're nothing is not going to matter. It's not going to change reality. So if everyone were to do this, would it be different? If we were to say that's how you build a sukkah, that everyone builds a sukkah by taking their house cushions and stepping on them, would that matter? Maybe.
Like the chametz wouldn't have value on Pesach for people because there's no one eating chametz.
Ah, okay. So because what?
Nobody's eating chametz. So if you try to sell it to someone else, no one...
Uh-huh. Okay, so I think it's certainly on the right track, and it could be you're right, because it's not a question with an objective answer. But let's take some elements of that and try to tweak it out a little bit more. Levi.
My understanding from that Gemara wasn't that the pillows weren't bustle. It's that the reason it wouldn't work was because people would view it as something expensive and not want to ruin it, so they wouldn't stay in the sukkah though. So it could very well be bustle, from my understanding. It's just other people don't view it as bustle, so they're not going to stay in the sukkah.
So therefore, it's a gezeira that you shouldn't do it this way because it'll keep you out of the sukkah?
I don't know gezeira, but...
Is that functionally
different? I don't know if it said it. The understanding I got wasn't that it wasn't necessarily... It wasn't that it wasn't bustle. It was that the perception of it was that it was expensive and people wouldn't want to go in a sukkah with that in there because it would spill something or whatever.
And therefore, well, how does that play out? So therefore, there's a gzeira. How is that different than just saying it's not bustle? You think it is bustle, but you're not supposed to do it?
It is bustle, but it might be irrelevant to whether or not people want to go in there.
So you're saying basically that there's a gzeira that they put on that don't do it this way because it'll keep people from going into the sukkah, even though theoretically, it should work.
Yeah, I guess it would be something like that.
Okay, we have to see if that's exactly how the Gemara is framing it, but okay, it could have been like that. Daniel?
Maybe it's just a difference in the amount of, in the amount of time they're saying it's considered nothing. Meaning that, that by sukkah, you're saying that it's considered like it's nothing all the time. Whereas by chametz, it's only for that duration of Pesach that you're saying that it's considered like it's nothing, but afterwards it'll be considered to be valuable again. So maybe that's the difference.
And how does that help us, though? I think there is that could end up playing a role, but how does that help us to answer this question? So what we know is chametz works and kashrus doesn't work. So you're saying that people won't argue with you that you're calling your chametz worthless because they can handle going without it for a week? Is that what you mean?
Right. When it comes to saying darkol b'nei adam, you know, that doesn't really apply in the case of chametz because of the fact that you're not actually saying that it's considered nothing. You're saying it's considered nothing for this period of time. You know, you're acknowledging the fact that after Pesach, it's going to be considered valuable again.
But a person in the abstract would say, if they came on to your house in Chol Hamoed Pesach and they saw this chametz, they would say, that looks pretty good to me. Like, I think that what you seem to be addressing, I think, would be more is if the question is, like, it's like from a Baal Tashchis point of view, if that were the objection. You're saying, how could your, like, for example, the way I phrased it lent to this, let's say if we were getting your wife's objections were the issue. Your wife's going to say, how could you destroy those expensive cushions? So that's going to be an issue. But on Pesach, she's not going to say, how could you destroy that expensive chametz? She's like, okay, I know it'll be here in a week, so I'm not going to be upset about it. So I guess if that
it's not even saying that, you know, I know it's going to be here in a week. It's more of, you know, it's understood that you consider it to be valuable. Everybody knows that you consider it to be valuable. It's just that during this period of time, it's not.
Well, so I guess if that were the issue, then I would hear it. But I think the point in the Gemara and Sukkah is not that everyone knows you consider it valuable. Like maybe we believe you that you consider it worthless. The most important thing to you is to get your Sukkah kosher, and you don't care that you're going to forget about these cushions forever. But an average person would look at this and say, that's not a floor, that's a cushion, and you're standing on a floor that's below it, and you're just on top of a cushion.
Right.
So it's not a bustle. Ari?
Maybe similar to what others were saying, if I read their words, is that you could make a distinction between the form of bittul required for the sukkah height versus the bittul required for the chametz. With sukkah, it has to be an objective measurement of, like, 20 amos. So that's like a construction standard, and that has no, you know, basis, and it doesn't care whatsoever how you relate to the chametz, or how you relate to the cushion. When it comes to the chametz, part and parcel of the bittul process is how you relate to them. So therefore, it doesn't necessarily matter how other people would view these, you know, these fancy schmancy items of chametz, as long as you personally relate to them as bittul, and that's sufficient.
Oh, so I think that definitely is an interesting element. It's not where the Chiddush Urim is coming, but we'll come back to that. I think there are others who may end up focusing on that. That maybe that is a crucial distinction between what we need for chametz and what we would need for other things. So hold on to that. We will come back to that possibility as something to pounce on. So what the Chiddush HaRim says is that he thinks the key distinction here is that when it comes to chametz, you're going to have to destroy this one way or another. That's the mitzvah here. The chametz is going to be on death row. So if the chametz is going to be destroyed, so then it doesn't get value because the average person would esteem it, would value it, because it's going to be destroyed. But that was not the case by the cushions and the pillows. You could have kept those forever. So therefore, to that, you say, but l'daitcha, the rest of the world will say these are valuable cushions and pillows. But when it comes to chametz, the chametz has to be destroyed. And therefore, it should be in the category of something that people will be mevatel completely. Daniel?
I mean, I just don't understand, because saying that it's going to be destroyed is a very subjective thing as well. It only applies to you or to Jews, I guess, in general, but to the rest of the world, they're still going to consider it to be valuable.
Okay.
You could still say that.
That might be a point. That might be a decent objection. It depends on how you perceive what the issue is. But you could say that chametz that you're the one controlling, and you're going to destroy it. So then everyone else might agree that that's ultimately valueless. But you're right that if you look at the Gemara as phrasing it more abstractly, so then the fact that you have plans to destroy it, maybe it shouldn't be factored in. But nonetheless,
yeah, if you're looking at it in the point of view of what I'm going to do,
mm-hmm.
then the same thing would apply by the pillows. If I'm the one who's taking the pillows and putting them on the floor,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're going to be disgusting. So then the din of butlos aitzes chalavim shouldn't apply there either.
Except that I don't have to do that, right? So I could leave those pillows alone. But
and
the
you
chametz,
theoretically, you don't have to get rid of your chametz. I mean, you don't.
But halachically, I do.
But in terms of everybody else in the world understanding, you don't.
Right. So that's why you could draw a distinction and maybe refute this answer. But where is he coming from? You know, does the answer at least contain a logical distinction? Whether it's enough of an answer or not, we'll have to see. But on the surface, it is a distinction between the pillows and the chametz. That there is this death sentence already imposed on it. Now, he brings up another objection to his own position. He says, well, that would be true if Chametz Sha'avar Lav HaPesach was also Aser. But we assume that the prohibition is Midrabbanan. So Machlokas, actually, the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. So if you're going to say that, according to the Yerushalmi, Midin Torah, Chametz is already gone, has to be destroyed, and even after Pesach, Chametz Shalav Pesach is also unusable. So then I hear it. But what about us who hold that by Torah law, you're allowed to have Chametz Sha'avar Lav HaPesach. And the fact that we have a prohibition, that's a prohibition midrabbanan mishum knas. It's a penalty. But theoretically, it could have been used then. So if you made it through Pesach without destroying it, then it has a benefit to you. Yeah, Akiva?
Sorry, I was going for this one. Might be completely off, but...
You have to go be mivayer your chametz.
Yeah, you can't be like mocher the chametz. Sorry if this is like not what you're saying, but like can't that make a difference in how it's viewed?
It makes a huge difference. But the question is, where does that come from? So if that's objectively true, so if that's from the Torah's perspective, so then okay, that should be relevant. But if we assume that as far as the Torah is concerned, you can sell it. And it's only a rabbinic prohibition. So then how does that affect them? So, yeah, Zach?
Well, we had that verse before that said that that the Rabbanan have a derisive force, you know, with these kind of things. Like
mm-hmm.
the author is talking about Hamid, so Kambus or Kedushin.
Right.
Like, would that maybe come into play here?
It does come into play. So ultimately that's the direction that he goes in. But he first also factors in the view of the Rambam that we started with. Because if you assume that bitul doesn't work for chametz that's yadua, so then together with the din d'rabbanan, this all works. So that if you had chametz that you know about, and that's in front of you, so then bitul shouldn't work, because even if you declare that it's nothing, still... And if you had chametz that you could keep till after Pesach and eat it then, so again, your bitul is not going to be significant because it's going to have this potential value for you after Pesach. But the fact that there's a din d'rabbanan, that's enough. And so the din d'rabbanan, that therefore means that you're not practically going to be able to use it even after Pesach. And yes, like Zach is saying, so therefore now your bittul, even on a deraisa level, is true because it cancels out the issue of butla daito eitzel das kol bnei adam. So, like you were saying, essentially, but this is maybe an unusual way, that the Rabbanan affects the Daraisa. Because since, at the end of the day, in this case at the end of the week, you're not going to be able to use the chametz, even though it's rabbinic law that's imposing that on you. But that makes your bitl now effective on a level in the HaTorah. Because maybe it wouldn't have been effective because of the inherent value that's there in the chametz that others would recognize, regardless of what you feel about it, but others will say it's there. But since Lamaisa, you're prohibited from using it or selling it or eating it, that makes it into something objectively useless now, and your bitl is affected. And he goes on from there, and this is particularly interesting, to explain a number of other things that we've seen already and that are relevant in B'dikas Chametz. So, for example, says, so when the first Rashi and the first Mishnah, when Rashi says that you need to do B'dikas Chametz, that you shouldn't violate Ba'yira Ba'yimatzeh, and Tosfos says, well, what do you mean? You have bitl. The Gemara later is going to say that bitl knocks it down to a drabana. So why are you at risk of bayira bayimatzeh? So if you say that bitl only works on chametz that's not yadua, and what's the definition of yadua and not yadua? So if we assume that chametz that you could find when you look for it is also called yadua, so then what that means is bitl doesn't work by that. But the chametz that you don't find, so then it's going to be subject to bitl because it's going to be usur afterwards. And now bitl works. So practically speaking, for us nowadays, because chametz is drabanan, because there's a prohibition of chametz after Pesach. That prohibition makes bittul effective. And now, for us, B'dikas chametz is only drabanan, because bittul chametz works because of the din drabanan that it's no good after Pesach. But before that happened, so you don't have the option of bittul chametz that's effective on a level minat Torah. So Rashi was describing that, theoretically, you would need B'dika minat Torah, because on a Torah level, indeed, Vedika is required. Midrabanan, Bittul works. And Bittul works so well that it also takes away the Chi of Minat Torah. But Rashi is describing what the din would have been. And he explains also how that could address the Rambam's issues with, on the one hand, saying it doesn't work for Chametz, that is Yadua, and on the other hand, these situations where you know about it and it's inaccessible or inconvenient because in the middle of this year you're going to go shech to your Korban Pesach, says that's all because ultimately we're dealing with the Rabbanans here. And they have the right to be makel in how it plays out. Daniel?
So just to be clear, we're saying that because Chomei Shavu Lava Zazak is Usher, that allows us to do that allows us to do Bittul, which then allows us to be eaten after Pesach.
Correct. So why does that bother you? Okay. So that was one of the objections. We're running out of time. It's a bigger topic. But I guess I'll have to fill this over in tomorrow. But so this was among the objections of the Minchas Elazar. So the Minchas Elazar, and there's more interesting stuff to say about the Chidushim, so we'll have to come back to it. But just to say quickly, not to keep you too long, the Munkacher Rabbi, the Minchas Elazar, were another one of the great Chidushim poskim. The Chidushim was the Ger Rabbi, the Minchas Elazar was the Munkacher Rabbi. And this is an internal Hasidic poskim fight. So the Minchas Elazar takes issue with this. He formulates his answer a little differently. It's interesting if you read everything inside. You'll see that he formulates the way the Chiddush Yerim answers it a little differently. Maybe he thinks what the Chiddush Yerim means. He doesn't say it exactly like this. But the way he quotes the Chiddush Yerim is saying that in the case of the sukkah, so you don't have to do this because if your sukkah is too big and you have a problem, so maybe you'll find another sukkah somewhere. You don't have to necessarily cancel out some cushions. But in the case of chametz, the chametz has to be destroyed, so it doesn't matter where you have other options, this chametz is going to have to be destroyed one way or another. So that's the way that he quotes the Chiddush Yerim, but he says ultimately he doesn't like it for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons, he has basically what he lists as four questions on the Chiddush Yerim. But one of them is, I think it's what Daniil is getting at, is that essentially it's circular. This is, you're basically saying that the chametz is mutter because it's aser. But then what's aser makes it mutter again. Right? That it's going to be, you're not going to be in violation, there won't be any ba'yura ba'yumatze on this chametz because you're mevatel. But the bittul only works because chametz shavu lav pesach is aser. But if you're mevatel, then it's going to be mutter again. If it's mutter again, then bittul shouldn't work. So your head's going to explode. Right? That is circular. And that shouldn't work. And he points to a few sources I can give you to look at tomorrow. But, yeah, I wonder how long I should keep you now, because it's going to take a little few minutes to explain. So I'll give you a few places to look at tomorrow to see what he compares it to, and you can consider whether you think it is comparable or not. But basically, he says this is circular and your head's going to explode. The davar chayzer chalilo. And therefore, that's already one of his four objections to the Chiddush Yerim's position. Ultimately, we'll have to fill in some of the blanks tomorrow, but ultimately what he says is the difference between sukkah and chametz is that there's a difference between an aseh and a los aseh. In the case of sukkah, you are trying to fulfill a mitzvah aseh. And in the case of chametz, you have a los aseh in front of you. And when it comes to los aseh, you have to give up all of your money not to violate a los aseh. So, therefore, the connection is that it doesn't matter how valuable this chametz is, you have an iser in front of you, you're going to be motivated to sacrifice all the value that's included in this chametz because of this prohibition. And when it comes to sukkah, you don't have that same pressure. So therefore, we can't necessarily assume that that's going to change anything. Daniil?
Well, that would be assuming that bittul is a din in ba'yumatzeh, non-tashbisim.
Yes, it would be. It certainly seems to be coming from that. That bittul is something about addressing a prohibition. So there's a lot that we still need to fill in tomorrow, so we will do that. But essentially this whole back and forth, and there are other answers also, but what emerges from the whole fight between the Chiddush Yerim and the Minchas Elazar, I think is ultimately a very big common point. That here, the Chiddush Yerim is saying it's because of the reality the chametz is going to be destroyed. And the Minchas Elazar is saying it's because of the iser that you have to deal with that requires you to give up anything in order not to violate. But ultimately, they're saying the same basic point. That here, bittul chametz is a negating of the chametz's value in your mind. And the question that gets in the way is, well, who cares that you negate the value? But the rest of the world will see this as valuable. So isn't it meaningless that you said you don't think it's valuable? So to that, the Chiddush Yerim will say, no, it's not meaningless because you're actually going to destroy this chametz otherwise. So therefore, that reinforces your calling it valueless. And therefore, it works. And the Minchas Elazar's position is that what reinforces it is the fact that you got to do this no matter what. You have an Isser, and the Isser is going to not give any space for any kinds of excuses. So therefore, even though you're losing valuable items, you're going to have to do it. In contrast to Sukkah, where Sukkah, you don't have that same pressure. So ultimately, they're both saying the same thing, that there is a enhancement of your dot. It's not your simple dot saying this is nothing. There's some, so if I just say, okay, my computer is nothing, my iPhone is nothing, so the rest of the world will say, what are you talking about? It's something. I see it, and I would use it, and I'll steal it from you if I can. So what do you mean it's nothing? So therefore, my saying it's nothing isn't meaningful. But in the case of chametz, there's something else. There's something else that's also, it's not just my saying it's meaningless. Something else is making it actually meaningless. So what is it? So the chusharim, it's the fact that it's destined for destruction. And in the view of the Minchas Elazar, it's the fact that I have an obligation to do this. And that obligation, which is very mandatory on me, is pushing my das into the next level. So we have to fill in some blanks. We ran out of time to fill in some blanks tomorrow, and also to address Daniel's question that the Minchas Elazar asks also, that your head's going to explode from the circular nature of this. So how exactly does that fit in? So I'll give you some more of the shorter time tomorrow. I'll give you some more Makaros look about that. We'll have to finish this off. And all of that, God willing, we will try to get some perspective on. But part of what I wanted you to appreciate today, as you see, so on the surface, we're dealing with a contradiction between two sources that forces us to try to come up with an answer. But in the process of doing so, so you refine your understanding of what the original shita is. So the shita that Bittul is a hashpas of Alev, the shita of Rashi and the Rambam. So what these achronim are doing, are telling you, is that you have to sharpen that position a little bit and say that it's not only that you declare it as nothing, but that you declare it as nothing with an enhancing factor, either the factor that it is indeed destined for destruction, or that you're declaring it as nothing as a function of an isser that you will be left with otherwise, and that takes on greater reality than it would otherwise. Okay, so we'll have to pick up from that, and we'll recap a little bit and then try to address some of the other major issues. So we've got a lot of Bittul Torah to cover. So looking forward to some more Bittul Torah tomorrow. But first, I'll see you at 9 o'clock for some chesed. And I wish you a productive and inspiring Monday. Right, this should be only good things. Yeah.